The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 12th of April, 2021. On the podcast today, Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. He discusses what's next after identifying 20 priority exploration targets at the Elizabeth Hill Silver Project in Australia. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, the CEO of Brand and Communications, talks about Kavango Resources, Keras Mineral Resources, and Argo Blockchain Mining. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can read, see, view, listen to lots of other content. There's Alien Metals there. There's one about that article there. Kickbox, one about that. Dev Clever article there. Also, don't forget Paul Hill. It's worth checking out Paul Hill's video with Equals results. Q&A with those guys there. And our COVID-19 index, of course, is firing on all four cylinders. Well, in fact, the biggest rise today, Open Orphan, up 7.7%, pretty much, so 46.25 pence, one I sold way too early. And biggest faller, Tech Capital, down 5% to 11.25 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Brody Good, CEO and Technical Director of Alien Metals. UFO is the ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
No, it's good to catch up. It's been a while. Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to catch up with you too, fella. You're keeping busy there, and you've announced you've 20 priority exploration targets at Elizabeth Hill Silver Project. We'll talk about that in a bit. But as always, Bill, for people not familiar, maybe just give us a brief outline as to the projects you've got going on there at Alien Metals.
Yeah, sure. At the moment, we've got two main jurisdictions for exploration projects, one in Australia, and coincidentally all in the sort of Pilbara region of Western Australia. We have 51% of the two iron ore projects, the Hancock and the Brockman, sort of high-grade DSO-grade material. We've just finished an initial drilling program on the Hancock project and are sort of getting the results, you know, reviewing the work done, the results, the next phase of work, and working up next phase on the Brockman project. And significantly, we have the Elizabeth Hill Silver Project, which is both the historic mining lease with the Elizabeth Hill Silver Mine on it, and also the Money Money North exploration lease, which sort of wraps around it. Which has been the focus of the release today, you know, sort of updating the market. And then we have three really good projects in Mexico. One, the Donovan 2 copper silver, copper gold project, being sort of funded and managed by Capstone Mining of Canada. Mm-hmm. And then we have the two silver projects, San Celso and Los Campos, that we're just, you know, working hard to get those drill permits granted so we can start drilling some holes into them as well.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Well, let's talk about these priority targets. So how did you find them, and what's next, Bill?
Well, we got Southern Geoscience Consultants of Perth, who are very, very long established and experienced geophysical group, who managed the project, and basically we identified that about half the land, the sort of ground of our area, needed reflying, whereas half had good quality tight line space data. So we got the new area flown. They then did their thing where they merged the older and the new data. So it's all one quality in terms of, as I said, line width, 50 meter line width, which is great for this sort of airborne work. And then they did interpretation and target generation using obviously the magnetic responses from the study, also historical information, geology, regional geology of the area, some historical exploration work done, obviously reference to the mine itself and the ore body, its geophysical signature, its geological location, structural location. And they came up with 20 priority targets. I think that's a key word, priority targets. So essentially they're saying you've got 20 targets you need to, before you go to the other potentially 10 or 15 out there, get on with those 20. They rank them, which is great, which helps us, of course, as well. I think we're really, some of the targets we already knew were historic targets already identified from predecessors working on the areas. Some are quite new and also quite relevant to recent work in the region, recent new discoveries and geological sort of understanding of mineralized systems that possibly weren't really known 5-10 years ago or even more, but which are very much relevant to the area and our project as well now. So now we're pushing on with several plans for following up this work on the ground, be it trenching, drilling, surface mapping, sampling, surface geophysics, tight, very close space grids over particular targets, using possibly different methods to specifically identify, be it platinum group elements or nickel or copper. The other exciting thing about this is it's not just one commodity. I mean, we have a historic silver mine with still significant upside. We have platinum group element anomalies and targets, several of those. We also have nickel, copper. It's fantastic that this project is giving us so many opportunities and potential.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got 20 priority targets and you've got further seven at level two and six at level three. So of those 20, where do you go from that now? I mean, you said they're ranked, but are those 20 ranked, or do you go for a certain amount, or do you go in for all of them? Or where do you go from here now?
The 20 priority are based, so you've got 20 in total. So you've got seven sort of rank one, seven rank two, and six rank three.
Okay.
Different people could rank, you could take a priority two, and I could be speaking to one of the team we're now talking with, some consultants, some people who've worked on this, on these areas on and off for like 25, 30 years. And I know that a couple have already said that for them, a priority two defined by Southern Geoscience, to them would potentially be more a priority one.
Okay.
We can focus on the priority one targets now. However, should we feel, for example, the Cadgerina Dyke, which is interpreted sort of in the central western area, but as it has been over the years talked about and interpreted as a possible feeder, so the sort of source of the money intrusion itself, which is the real driving force behind the geology and the mineralization of this system. Now that is, even though it's ranked as a third priority target, in some ways I know some people feel it's a first priority. So we're sensibly going to approach start obviously from the top down.
Yeah.
So priority one targets, as per the table in the RNS, the announcement, you know, we've got sort of seven great, you know, very strong targets to work up. You know, and potentially we can incorporate two targets into one larger work program. So that we can do a mapping program that might cover three or four targets, for example, along the Hunter's PGE reef in the sort of southern trend there. So we can be hitting several targets at the same time. We might decide to do some ground geophysics with the same, you know, with the same outcome to do, rather than just do one small isolated area, do a trend of three or four sort of targets that you know, define that area.
Yeah, yeah. And over what time period will you be looking, getting on the ground and looking at these targets then, Bill?
Well, you know, we're working already with some consultants in Australia. You know, we've got the funding in place to really kick this off. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get, you know, secure a drill rig for an early drill program. So we're pushing ahead. I mean, it's very difficult exploration and especially in Western Australia, which is very much, you know, there's a huge demand at the moment for machines, equipment, people. It's sort of boom time out there.
Mm-hmm.
COVID is still restrictive. There's not, you know, I'm very keen to get down there, but I personally still have to sit in a hotel for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
On arrival, if I could get even a sort of visa to get in, and then, you know, before I can actually get on the ground. So, yeah, all those factors will potentially does not enable us to say, right, next week we'll be doing this and 2 weeks time we'll be doing that. But the focus at the moment for the team in Australia, while we're sort of processing the iron ore results and looking to what we're doing next there, is to get some of these programs started.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Bill, as always, that's three reasons then. If someone's liking the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, just give them three quick bullet point reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Alien Metals to their watch list, please.
Well, I think just the announcement today is a significant announcement for the company and just shows the potential of this project that we've sort of gradually picked up over the last couple of years. So that's one, because you've got multi-commodities in an area that's already proven deposits exist, economic deposits. Secondly, again, Mexico, we have some great projects there. Silver, great commodity. You know, very strong futures, very strong demand, and we still have a lot of belief in our two silver projects in Mexico, and of course in the copper project being run by Capstone at the moment. And thirdly, again, it's you know, it's alien. It's the people driving the company forward. I'd like to think we're doing it the right way. We're investing correctly. To add value to the projects.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Bill, good to chat to you. Like I say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
No, nice to speak to you too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Well, good morning, Jess. Is it January or is it April? It's kind of hard to tell at the moment. It's sleet and snow and freezing cold.
I know it's April because people are now shopping, whereas in January, yes. They couldn't. In fact, my wife straight away has gone out looking for a sofa, and she absolutely rammed in there. She's doing FaceTimes. Do you like this sofa? I don't know. Is it comfortable? Yeah, well, do you like it? She said to me, do you like it firm or soft? I said, hey. You know,
right.
I'll let you to be the judge of that.
Here we go.
But
more innuendo on the Vox Markets podcast.
I know, but literally, it's good though. I think that people are rushing out the shops, not from a COVID perspective, but I mean, just getting out there and buying. You know, because a lot of retailers there need it. You know, and of course pubs outside. I'm glad that I heard one clip from the radio. This guy said they opened this pub in up north somewhere. I think maybe Huddersfield somewhere. They opened the pub at 12 o'clock at night, and the beer garden was full. And this one guy said, oh, I was gasping for a pint. I thought, well, you can get takeaways. It's like it's not like you haven't had any beer for like 6 months, you know. It's ridiculous.
So he was sitting outside with a ski suit on, was he?
He was, yeah. It was snowing at one point, they said. But I thought, I'm never that desperate for a pint. But I'm glad it'll inject, hopefully, you know, a bit of... a bit of spark, a bit of cash into these businesses and keep them going because we got another 35 days and it's fully open, you know, and our figures are looking good, to be honest. The COVID figures are right down. I always look at hospital admissions because that's what's keeping the economy locked down, and it's gone from a peak of 4,600 per day to now just 220. So, you know, it is really dropped off a cliff, that, which is very good, you know.
It has. Well, sterling work by Boris's government in terms of just driving through with the vaccination program. Because, I mean, we're over half of the UK population vaccinated now, which is an incredible achievement. And that's why Europe is still in lockdown, because, they didn't take the measures necessary early enough. And they were too busy squabbling over, you know, what would work and what wouldn't. And, there are problems with the AstraZeneca vaccine, but those problems are vastly outweighed by the benefits of having it. It's great news, and it's just great that we have the prospect of a return to normality. I mean, I haven't been to our offices in London for over a year. Not that I've needed to, but I'm really looking forward to just to getting back up there, meeting some people, bit of banter, and maybe a pint in a pub.
Yeah. I know it is something to look forward to, I suppose. Marvellous. Right. Well, I hope we'll have a... I hope people go. I mean, I know some businesses have suffered. We know that. But I think a lot of people as well haven't spent money and they can't go on holidays. So there's a bit of a, like I said, an urge to get out there and do a bit of spending or do something. Well, I don't have to encourage the wife. She's always, ready to go, ready to help the economy, the wife is. Always, never shy, never shy in coming forward in that sort of respect. But cool. Stocks, what are you looking at, Al? What's going on?
Okay, the commodity super cycle continues regardless, and obviously, now we've got the prospect of a recovery or the start of the recovery in the retail sector. That's great as well. But I'm not looking at those today. I'm looking at two mining stocks and also a blockchain company. So first of all, I want to talk about Kavango Resources. KAV is the epic code. This company's got a market cap of 10.5 million, so it's right, it's a micro cap, it's right down there at the very bottom. But over the past year, it's done a tremendous amount of work in developing the three key assets it holds, and is on the verge, I think, of a major re-rating. So firstly, I'm going to talk about their main prospect, which is the Kalahari Suture Zone. This is in Botswana, in southern Africa. It's a vast piece of territory, some 8,500 square kilometres, and is prospective for copper and nickel and, of course, platinum group metals. Why is it so special? Why is it so special? Well, I'm just trying to sort of, signpost things as we go along. It's special because it's very similar in terms of its geology, in terms of the way it came to be in the billions of years ago when the Earth was formed. Its geology is very similar to the Norilsk mine in Siberia, which produces 20% of the world's nickel, 90% of Russia's nickel, 55% of Russia's copper, and 10% of the world's cobalt. It's a massive mine. It's got many billions of tons still left to mine, and the geology that the modelling that's taking place at the KSZ Kalahari Suture Zone is very similar to the Norilsk mine. So if that is the case, once the drilling starts, drilling is will be underway this quarter. They've They have undertaken numerous consultancies across the contract, across the prospect, and if you go to the website, there is a very very detailed 3D model of the KSZ, which is well worth a look because it gives you an understanding of the comparisons, also the similarities with the Norilsk mine. So that will be taking place this quarter. They also announced in February that two new licenses had been identified south of the Kalahari Suture Zone with 149 historic drill holes. So that's the first and the major prospect. The second one there is the Ditau Camp project in southern Botswana. This covers an area some 7.5 kilometers square. There are huge deposits in the ground there, and the deposits are very or highly prospective for rare earth metals. Drilled in the 1970s, but the recent data analysis and modelling undertaken, Michael Foster, the CEO, said last year that there's mounting evidence that the Ditau Camp project is at the centre of a huge alkali magmatic complex, which is indicative of these rare earth metals. Well, it's indicative of these rare earth metals. Okay. It's the geological formations that point to the presence of metals such as neodymium, praseodymium, and all the rest of it. Key battery components or key metals for battery components and other applications. So that's Ditau Camp. The third one is the Kalahari Copper Belt. The mineral belt in western Botswana on the Ganzi Ridge. There are two joint ventures in this region. The first one is with LVR Geo Explorers, two copper licenses, and the second one is, of course, with Power Metal Resources. That's Paul Johnson's company, and the interest or the licenses between those two companies is going to be spun off. Well, it's already been spun off into a separate company called Canyon Resources, which will be, which is going to be listed a little later on this year. So the assets between those three are considerable. The company is very well funded. It raised some money last year, and also this year it's already raised, getting on for $500,000 in warrant exercises. So there's plenty of cash in the bank to undertake all the work that's necessary going forward, and really there's been very little movement in the share price to date. The shares are consolidating around the 3p mark at the moment, been as high as 3.9p on the year, but I fully expect that once the drilling starts and we see some further data emerging from these three sites, we will see some further movement in the share price.
Ticker again is KAV, is it?
KAV, yep, that's right.
What do you call it? Kavango?
Kavango, yeah, that's it.
Kavango, yes.
Resources. Yeah, Kavango! So the chief executive, Michael Foster, is formerly of De Beers. He would work with Reunion Mining, Zincox, and Copper Belt, so well-known sort of in the mining sector. And the founder of the co-founder of the company, a fellow called Mike Moles, also previously worked with Reunion, also worked at Lonmin and Delta Gold. So, there's a very experienced team on the ground there. And as I say, there's that joint venture company, Kanya Resources, that will be spun off and floated separately with Power Metal Resources.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Cool. What's next then, Al?
Okay, so I'll talk about the blockchain company last of all, but the second company is Keras Mineral Resources, and this has only just come to market, but it's already starting to blaze a trail. CMRS is the epic code. Shares are traded as high as just under 15p and 10.5p, basically where they came to market. They're just under 13p today. They're up 5%, have been up a bit higher. Now, Keras Mineral Resources has a portfolio of copper and gold licenses in Cyprus across a number of brownfield sites and former producing mines. So unlike many mining companies that have an asset and then they have to examine the asset, do soil sampling and so on, Keras has already taken a quantum leap in that regard before coming to market. It's aiming now to define a mineral resource estimate of some 20 to 30 million tons of copper and gold across those assets, but it's already made a lot of progress since raising just over 2 million at 10p on March the 19th when it came to market. So we're basically less than a month in. The company started drilling at the North Mathias copper and gold prospect well ahead of schedule, which the chief exec Martin Churchill said reflected the advanced nature of the projects, and of course these projects basically represent more than half of the former producing mines in Cyprus. So that's quite a spread of assets. Start of this month, in fact, last week, they acquired a company called Plutonic Resources Limited, which 100% owns the truly Cochin Petra. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, Cochin Petra and the St. Nicholas Copper and Gold Projects is paying $750,000 in shares for that company. And as part of the due diligence, the company announced today, April 12th, that drilling has started on the Truly prospect, and they've already recovered visible gold from randomly selected drilled chips. Now, the Gossan, which is the area that contains the gold, was thought in up to date to be 10 meters thick, but the work that's been undertaken has revealed is actually over double that, 25 meters thick, way exceeding expectations, and that of course has accounted for the share price movement today. So these projects are well advanced, so the pace of work already indicates that there's going to be a lot more to come in the next few months. Martin Churchhouse, of course, the CEO, former Anglo-American Goldfields, Georgia Mining Corp, London Mining Corporation, and the chairman is a fellow called Mike Johnson, who sits on the Rio Tinto Chair of Environmental Engineering at the University of Liverpool and is also an external advisor to Rio Tinto. So, you know, this is a team of very experienced people who I think have got an absolute gem of an asset in Cyprus with these licenses, because in many ways a lot of the work's already been done because they are former producing mines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. I've got to say, I'm not in love with the resource sector. I know, you know, at the moment it's rallying. We've got a super cycle. It's a lovely super cycle you've got there, son.
Super cycle, yes.
And of course, there's lots of opportunities. But are you in that? Do you hold any stock there, Al, or not?
I do. Yes, I hold. I have stock in both. But Keras Minerals in particular, I think has got a great future, and I'm really excited about it. So yeah, I do hold stock in those companies.
Okay, cool. And how many stocks do you hold at the moment, roughly, in your portfolio there, in your portfolio?
Well, we spoke last time. I've got about, goodness me, well, I've probably got more now. I've probably got about 28 stocks, so I've got a real spread.
Calm down, Al. There's no point doing that. Yeah, honestly, yeah. I've done the math on it. If you want diversification, you've got to buy a fund. Okay? If you want to make real money, you've got to concentrate on a handful of stocks, five stocks, maybe.
Well,
have you got a fund as well? You've got a fund as well, haven't you?
I've got funds as well, but I also have another dealing account and with a terrific stockbroker who is plugged into the markets, he's basically been trading on my behalf and done a fantastic job.
I know, but listen, remember this: diversification will protect you against risk, but also against reward.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want outsized gains, you've got to, you know, really have conviction on a handful of stocks, not 20 or so. You may as well just buy a fund, you know, which we've got a fund as well.
I absolutely know that, but at my stage of life, I've got different priorities. So
we'll get a fund then. Have a fund. What should you have? Out of 60%, how old are you now? You're 60, are
you? I'm 60, mate. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so you have 60% in a fund, right? Or a couple of funds taking up 60% of your portfolio, and then 20% in, say, three stocks you really have conviction on. So, you know, you're still majorly diversified because you've got the funds. But, so you make outsized gains that way, and you'll be a bit safe, you see. Just do the maths. Get a spreadsheet, do the maths on the diversification. I've got one, and I realised when I was going over 10 stocks, pointless, absolutely pointless.
Well, yeah, I I think it depends on how you pick the stocks and also your entry point too. But I've got to say, thus far it's worked well. I mean, as you know, I got out of the markets last year completely it was at the beginning of March last year, and I've scaled back in over the year. And as I say, I now have a stockbroking account as well, where somebody's doing a great job, trading.
Okay,
and
I understand and you're not hearing me.
Buying these companies.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand.
I agree with you, Jess.
Thought about this. People just say, I see people on Twitter and all that, older investors, and you need 20 or 30 stocks. You don't. If you are working, if you're not full time in the markets, you haven't got time to research that many. You haven't got time to research conviction. So by trying to be a fund, because you're dealing costs and all that, and your research time is not like that of a fund manager. So put your faith in a fund for diversification, then go for like a handful, literally. I mean, less than five. I mean, stocks that you have conviction on, and weight your portfolio, and that way you get outsized gains. Plus, you also have diversification. I've looked into this. For ages, I didn't know how many stocks to hold. So, right, I'm trying to work this out for myself, and I got a little spreadsheet knocked out. And realized, hang on a sec. If I'm going over five stocks, it's a bit silly. Obviously, it depends on the size of your portfolio. I mean, if you're a multi-billionaire like yourself, Al, then maybe you need 20 odd stocks.
I have to say, I mean, one of the joys I think about, as we're talking on the podcast, said, because I do research a lot of stocks, and it's part of what I do. So through that process, I suppose I have a set of criteria, and I get to know the company, get to know the board. Of course, I make mistakes all the time, but generally speaking, I think I can spot the ones that do have an opportunity and do have perhaps a distinct advantage over the others. And of course, there are times when those stocks will be in vogue when the macro backdrop is a better fit for.
No, I agree with all that. What I'm saying is on the maths of it. Listen to this now, right? Let's say you hold 20 stocks, right? You hold 20 stocks. And you get a stock that doubles, which is good, isn't it? Not every stock doubles. Your portfolio value, if all stocks are equally weighted, for example, 20 stocks, your portfolio value will only go up by 5%. Now, is that worth it, considering you've found a stock that's bagged and you've only gone up by 5%? I want more reward than that. So even if you went out of 10 stocks, at least your portfolio got up by 10%. And if you went out of 5 stocks, your portfolio value went up by 20%. So see, if you diversify too much, you won't get the benefit of a good riser. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
No, you need the benefit of a good riser, Al.
Yeah, you do, yes, especially at my age. Yeah, over the days.
Thankful for anything, But so, I've seen some people have 20, 30, 50 stocks. For example, you have 50 stocks, right? And you get a 10-bagger. A 10-bagger, they're hard. In your career, some people are lucky to have one 10-bagger, if that. Now, if you get a 10-bagger and you hold 50 stocks, your entire portfolio will only go up by 20%. You found the holy grail of stocks, and your portfolio only got up by 20%. So that's what I'm saying. If you've got a 10-bagger, you want to feel some reward from that. So if you had like three stocks and you had a 10-bagger, your portfolio would go up by 333%. That's the kind of reward you want from a 110 bagger. But you've still got two other stocks, maybe a fund, So that's what I'm saying. Just the mass of it. People got to be careful. Yep. If you find a cracker and, it doesn't transform your portfolio. You want a 10 bagger to transform your portfolio value. If it doesn't, you've got way too many stocks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very sound advice, Jess. Very sound advice. And I think actually for somebody earlier in their investing career, and I see these people on Twitter. You see people that say they have a £100,000 portfolio and they're spread across five stocks, and there is a greater degree of risk. But if that 20 grand stock that they're in at 5p suddenly goes to sort of 35 or 40p, then that's terrific. That's real growth. Mm. I get that. But I'm in a different position, so I invest differently. But like I say, I could do a fund, but because I do talk regularly on podcasts and I do a lot of research, I just get to know about stuff and I'm happy to have a go. And certainly my old colleague Malcolm Stacey from years ago, that was something that he always did and it worked very well for him. So
I agree. Yeah. But if you got, for example, how much weight percentage wise do you have in one of these stocks? What's the average weightage of a stock you hold? Is it like, because you've got 20 stocks, obviously if you've got 20 stocks or 20 more than that.
Well, yeah, so probably of that, so 100%, probably 45 to 50% of my portfolio is in funds. So we're then talking about the rest. And the weighting will depend. I mean, sometimes I'll just have a small punt. If I'm confident about where it's going, I'm quite happy just to put a very small amount of money in to a small stock on the basis that it maybe could 10 or 10 bag or even 100 bag. And I've had those and I'm quite happy to sell on the way up. I mean, you know, Open Orphan's a great case in point. I mean, that's, you know, it's doing fantastically well, really. It's,
But when you have like that many stocks and you've got 2.5% average exposure to a stock, you're not going to get any benefits from that when it does really well that much. It's not going to make you rich or you're not going to be well. You will get well off. And if you get a 10-bagger, you want to actually be able to say, wow, I could really pay off the mortgage with that.
But I have a diverse range of interests, just so.
No, keep it clean, Al. Let's go on the last rock. We don't want to get down that alleyway again. I had to pull the podcast last time you got into some of your interests. Right.
Yes.
Right, let's go into the final stock. It's a blockchain. What is it? Argo
Blockchain, yeah.
Did I tell you about that? That's my biggest mistake I ever made. I did three videos on that company. I did three videos on Bitcoin saying why I'm convinced Bitcoin. This is when Bitcoin was like $8,000, I think, around about that. Mm. And I did three videos on Argo, and I held them at the time. I said, listen, this is the best way to get exposure in the ISA because you can't buy Bitcoin, of course, via ISA. So get it via Argo. They're a miner. And for ages, it just didn't go anywhere. And the Bitcoin price was going sideways. But I kept saying, no, it'll move. And in the end, I just lost patience with it. And I must have been up, I don't know, I was up probably single-digit percentage-wise. That's all, nothing, if that, maybe even break even. It's now done 3,000%.
So it's incredible.
If you put a grand in, it'd be worth £33,000. And I jumped up way too early. That for me would have been, I don't have a mortgage now, but that for me, I could have bought another house for that easy for the money I had in there at the time. But so when that thing, you learn about these things though. When you get into something you realize have a bit of patience sometimes because the market takes a while to catch up on things, you know. And even if you're in early, even in EV plays or something like that, wait a little bit. If the case is still there, if you're still convinced in the investment case, original investment case, just stick with it sometimes, you know.
Sometimes you have to wait for the market to come to you, you know, because the fundamentals are all there, the investment's there, the reason to buy is there, but the market isn't moving. And then all of a sudden, as we saw with Bitcoin last December, late last year, it just exploded again. I mean, the price just exploded. So, of course, what it means now for Argo as Bitcoin miners, it's a license to digitally print money because they're miners. Of course, they're listed in America, listed in the UK, they're based in America. They have their mining centers in Texas and also in Canada. They're just growing exponentially, and it's just a massive success story. They announced in April, of course, a trading update. They mined 165 Bitcoin in March compared to 129 in February. So the quarter one production is 387 Bitcoin, which basically equates to 13.5 million, which makes it their most profitable quarter to date. Of course, as we know, when you mine Bitcoin, it uses a tremendous amount of electricity. So they've endeavored to get to a place where they can manufacture Bitcoin as cheaply and as greenly as possible. But to that end, they launched at the end of March at a thing called Terrapool, which is a joint venture with a company called DMG Blockchain to generate green Bitcoin with this clean energy mining pool. Yeah.
That's the issue at the moment, isn't it? That's the issue. They're saying that if anything takes Bitcoin down, it's the power needed is carbon footprint is massive. I had some people, you know, I tweeted out an article like this from The Independent, and I had a lot of Bitcoin, you know, enthusiasts really having a go saying, have you considered the carbon footprint of banks and all that stuff? And I thought, well, hang on, it's like banks do supply our money and they are the cogs and the wheels, the machinery behind businesses and everything, global commerce. You know, Bitcoin is not, it's a traded asset. So let's not get it over, you know, these people are now almost blind into thinking that Bitcoin will be the future currency. It's not going to be a future currency because it's too volatile. It may be an asset.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Well, it is an asset now. Of course it is. Self-fueling. But, I mean, you can't compare the carbon footprint of banks, which every business, you know, sits on top of their systems with Bitcoin. So, and I'm sure the banks are trying to do something about carbon footprint as well. But, yeah, I think that's one of the things, one of the hurdles they need to do is overcome this green thing, isn't it, really, you know?
It is, and they're really taking steps to overcome it. They've also appointed an agency called Guidehouse as their climate strategy advisor to, and they're aiming to achieve a net zero output. So no matter how much Bitcoin they manufacture, it's they're aiming for net zero, which is great. And I think this is the way companies have to go. And of course, how do you generate that much electricity to feed the machine, as it were, to generate Bitcoin? That is going to be an increasing challenge. Of course, the chief executive of Argo Blockchain, Peter Wall, has made history as the first CEO in history to receive his salary in Bitcoin, and that in itself is a significant step. But we've also seen them over the past year invest into other assets. Pluto Digital Assets, they took a 25% stake in, which is a decentralized technology investor. So what I like about Argo is, aside from the core mining processes or the core mining activity that they're engaged in, they're also active investors into developing decentralized finance technology. And they've taken stakes in Pluto Digital Assets and other companies throughout the past year as well. So this company just continues to grow. We've already spoken about the incredible rise in the value, currently worth $880 million, has been worth more than that. Shares are currently trading at £2.26, down from a year high of £3.40. And of course, the year low is 3.4p. So, goodness me, if you got in this time last year, as you say, with a grand or with a couple of grand, then you'd be sitting pretty right now. But I didn't. You sold just, so there we go. But that Argo for me underlines why we love the markets, because these opportunities do come along and all of a sudden you can see exponential growth in the company in a matter of months that is life changing, both for the people that work there, you know, the opportunities it creates, the employment it creates, and of course for shareholders in that early, that spectacular return.
Yeah, I would say now that, you know, be careful at the moment, because I know Bitcoin is still rallying. It looks strong on the chart, but this has had its massive rise. The fast, easy money has been made here, and
yes,
I think if we have a sell-off in Bitcoin, these companies are very leveraged to crypto, and if we have one of those crypto sell-offs that can happen, I mean, they're more well supported now, of course, because there are more institutions into them, so maybe be less volatile, but I'd be careful. This has had a fast rise. It's going sideways a little bit. And like I say, it's very leveraged to the crypto market. And if that has a sell-off, this will be very volatile. So be very careful, everyone. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. Well, I think a good example or a good warning for people is what happened with Novacyt last week. And of course, we saw Novacyt warn on full year profits, and the shares literally halved in value in about half an hour. So I think the chief executive bought 500,000 shares, if I'm right in thinking, at a much higher level. So it wiped out a big chunk of his holding, and that is what can happen. You know, when you've got companies that are leveraged so much, you know, based on circumstances at that time. Obviously, COVID in the case of Novacyt and Bitcoin here, literally out of a clear blue sky, you know, it could come crashing down. So, yeah, it's great to get involved with these companies, but, you know, do take your money out, for heaven's sake.
Volatility can be bigger. How much, if Bitcoin stays where it is and goes fine, it's fine because they're mining that, but it's still, I don't understand. The valuation is still quite high, though, isn't it? I know it's based on future revenue, but they hold about $45 million in Bitcoin, in dollars, $45 million in Bitcoin. They're mining, what, 31. So it's still quite high, the valuation there. So it's a lot of hype in that valuation, you know?
Well, there is, but it's also based on the rate of growth. You know, if you look at the rate of growth, the amount of Bitcoin they've mined in March compared to February, compared to January, and so on. You can see why it's trading on that multiple. But yeah, any interruption to that, any reduction in the value of Bitcoin, it can all change. But then the flip side is that a lot of analysts think that Bitcoin is going to be worth $400,000 to $500,000 a coin in 3 to 4 years' time. So if that is the case, goodness me. I mean, it seems almost ludicrous to think of that, but it's out there and people, you know, analysts are talking about it. But what do they really know?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Do you know what you realise? It's always worth trying to work out rough valuations, say this is where the base case should be. But of course, if you're in a hot sector, then those valuations can, you know, literally you throw them out the window, because once you get momentum behind a stock, then that's something I always say that the brokers, the analysts can't price in. Once you've got that momentum, It just goes nuts. Buying begets buying, like selling begets selling, you know? And once it starts going one way quickly, the fear of missing out grows so strongly. When you got people, you know, especially Bitcoin, you got these Bitcoin enthusiasts just constantly saying, yeah, it's going to the moon, you know? That just fuels the hype. And just doesn't stop. But that can change. Like I said, that can change. So be careful, you know.
It's a weird thing, too. I put up a quote last night on my Twitter, and from Jason Kingdon, who's the CEO of Blue Prism. We've spoken about Blue Prism, PRSM, once or twice, just. He said that UK investors don't get what his company does. It's robotics, of course. It's robotics for application systems and all the rest of it. He says UK investors don't get it. If his company were listed on the NASDAQ, it would be worth eight times as much. And we've spoken about dual listed companies in the past, and of course those that, you know, we saw with Myriad, for instance, they listed on OTC and the shares literally doubled within a week, and that's what can happen. So I think with Argo, you know, they're looking to the US to they have operations over there. They want exposure to US investors, and of course they've got their OTC listing, have they? I think they have. Yes, they're looking to get a listing over there as well. Argo,
there's no point. People in the CEOs of companies listed only on the London market whinging at the valuations on the London market. If you want to do something about it, list in America then. You know, because that's the way. I've had quite a few CEOs saying, "Oh, you know, the UK markets don't know how to value us." They do. It's valid as it is. That's how it's valued. You can't argue that. That's what it is.
That's how we value it. But,
If you want a bigger valuation and you think it'll be done in America, go to America. It's not whinging about it. Do you know what? That's a red flag to me when CEOs say that. They should stop saying that. Just go and list in America then. Stop whinging about it. You know?
Yeah. Agree.
It's like, you can say that with anything. If my house was in America, it'd be worth a lot more. it's not though, is it? You know, so there we are. If I sold my house, I could say that, couldn't I? If I sold my house here, I could buy a lot bigger house in America. Well, move to America then. Oh yeah, I will.
Exactly.
Good point. Yeah, I will do that. There we are. Marvelous. Cheers, Al. Thank you very much, and we'll speak next week.
Cheers, Joss. Speak you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are. At five, My Health Checked. It's up 0.76% to 6.65. At four, Helium One. Up 25.56% to 14 pence. At three, Novacyt. It's taken a bit of bashing of late, of course. Down 2.4% to 4.11. It's due to that contract with the NHS not being extended. At two, Universe Group. Up 2.75% to 5.6. And at one, C4X Discovery Holdings up 11.25% to 44.5. Okay, it's time for the top five most read and most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, C4X Discovery Sanofi Agreement. At four, Ridgecrest Holdings and Company. At three, Avacta Group, issue of equity. At two, Vela Technologies, replacement, update, St. George Street Capital. And at one, Canadian Overseas an update on cancellation of LSE listing. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.